Chapter 17. Celebrating a Life. Beginning on New Year's Day, from across the nation and around the world, the news media frenzy began descending on the Houston area. What became known as the Texan Stand, the New Year's Day Texan battle to defeat terrorism, was the top story on everyone's lips. The Texan Stand would eventually become an historic event in league with the 9/11 attack on New York City. Only this time, the attack was just barely thwarted. On the following Wednesday, Violet made it back home to San Antonio, only now she worked for the FBI. To avoid conversations with the other firemen at her firehouse, Violet had a private meeting with Rocky at a local park. After apologizing to Rocky for blowing up his ambulance, she let him know that she would be leaving the fire department. Apparently, an FBI agent had visited Rocky earlier in the week, imparting the critical importance of protecting Violet's identity from the public eye. The reasons were complex, tied to a much larger and still unseen future battle. Although Rocky didn't know all the details from the previous weekend, he knew enough about what Sam and Violet had been through to understand the gravity of the situation, and that he would be proud to cover for her. Rocky gave Violet a ride to the firehouse, where she quickly and silently placed her suitcase on the back seat of her car, and then climbed in behind the wheel. With a sense of fondness, she paused, gazing at the firehouse with a warm smile. She was going to miss her fellow firemen, especially the good food. Violet said to herself, "I'll be back some other time." Then she drove away. For now, Violet needed to lay low. At some point, after things calmed down, she could come back and say her goodbyes. When Violet arrived home at her apartment with her luggage, she hesitated before opening the door. It was good to be home, but she knew when she opened the door, she would immediately see her memorabilia for John. After a weekend full of emotion and drama, she was about to be reminded again about the loss of her husband. Although it was soothing to be home, her living room would also likely be a minefield for emotions. Violet entered her apartment and then slowly closed the door. As the door clicked shut behind her, she stood rooted near the doorway for a moment, just staring across the room at her wedding photo with John. He was still here like always, his smile a reminder of enduring love and the happiest day of her life. Her eyes filled with tears as she connected with his eyes, almost crying. She wiped away her tears then placed her suitcase onto the couch. After opening the suitcase, Violet pulled out a small red velvet bag, and then slowly moved towards her wedding photo. After a deep sigh, she removed John's necklace from the bag, and lovingly kissed the Star of David pendant. The necklace was still in good shape, except for a small bend in the chain. The bend would forever be a testament to its unintended role in her survival. With gentle care, she placed the necklace on the shelf alongside John's burial flag. The necklace had always been a powerful memento of her husband, it was now also a reminder of a struggle for Violet's own life. She closed her eyes and had a conversation with her husband. "John, sorry about the bend," she said. "But I had to use your necklace to stop a really bad guy. Your necklace saved my life." It took Violet a moment to regain her composure. Sometimes, just speaking certain words can trigger strong feelings. Then she continued saying, "I had a crazy weekend. I stopped a lot of evil men from hurting a whole bunch of innocent people. I'm certain you would have been proud of me." Then Violet changed the topic, saying, "Since I've been meeting with Dave's family, I've been feeling stronger about losing you. Helping them has been helping me." She reached out and softly touched John in the photo. "I didn't realize how lost I was until Dave gave me that last hug to give to his family. I've passed his hug to all of them, except for his wife Julie. She's been in denial, like it's all just a bad dream for her." For a second time, the words that Violet just spoke touched an emotion deep within her. Her eyes began to fill with tears, and she was half crying as she whispered, "Kind of, like me." In that instant, Violet recognized her own denial, and how she had been lingering ever since she lost John. After John had died, Violet had resigned from the Air Force and then moved back to San Antonio, in search of something that she couldn't explain. Perhaps, she was looking for a connection, searching for any kind of connection at all, to her lost love. She couldn't save her husband, it was too late. But working as an EMT, she was saving others, every single day. Just then, her phone vibrated with a text coming through, breaking Violet's train of thought. She wiped away her tears again, and read the text was from Davy. In the text, Davy said that they were having a funeral for his father on Saturday evening at the King Street Christian Center, the same church where she had been meeting with Dave's family. Violet knew she had to go. She had formed an unexpected relationship with Dave's family, and she thought perhaps that it might be an opportunity for her to reconnect with Julie. She laughed softly, and then with a smile she looked back up at her photo of John, and asked, "Did you have something to do with this text?" It was Saturday evening, and the darkness of the night had descended upon the city of Canyon Creek, as Violet traveled to Dave's church for the funeral, and with her was Sam. The day before, Violet had finally opened up to Sam. She confessed to him all about Dave's last hug, and her involvement and rendezvous with Dave's family. So Sam had offered to attend the funeral with her. As they approached the church, the parking lot was mostly full. In addition, there were several news trucks parked out along the street, a reminder of Dave's tragic end that brought Violet and him together. This was not to be a typical funeral, because of the way Dave had lost his life, the whole nation was watching. His funeral was newsworthy, and his community was heartbroken. There was sure to be a strong showing of sympathy and support from the entire community, as well as people from across the state. As Violet scanned the parking lot, she said to Sam, "It's a good thing we got here early. Dave apparently has a lot of people that are going to miss him." Sam agreed and replied, "Yes, indeed. I'm impressed, and the funeral is not scheduled to start for another 45 minutes. I hope we can find a seat inside." Sam was on crutches and his leg injury wrapped in a protective brace, which made mobility a challenge. Violet said, "I'll drop you off up close, then I'll go find a place to park. You go inside and find us a seat, and I'll find you." Then she added jokingly, "If you act helpless enough, I'm sure they'll help the guy on crutches find a seat." Sam replied, "Yeah, right, well, I at least hope so." Violet added with a smile, "If they give you a hard time about holding a seat for me, tell them it's for your grandma, and she's parking the car." Sam chuckled and came back with, "Just don't be long, grandma." After Violet parked, she found her way into the church and then spotted Sam inside. Fortunately, Sam had managed to secure a seat near the back, and he also had a seat waiting for her. Violet squeezed through the crowd standing near the back of the church, then sat down next to Sam. She remarked, "It's a good thing I dropped you off. We were lucky to get these seats." The interior of the church was a breathtaking spectacle of faith and artistry. Along each side of the sanctuary were ornate stained glass windows, and behind the altar, a magnificent ensemble of more stained glass creations, forming a stunning centerpiece, a testament to the enduring power of religious symbolism. Tonight, however, the traditional focus of the church had been transformed to that of a funeral, a celebration of Dave's life. A massive television screen elevated above the pulpit dominated the space. Strategically placed midway along the sides of the sanctuary were two smaller screens, giving those in attendance further back a good view of the digital presentation. Anticipating an overwhelming turnout, the church had thoughtfully arranged large outdoor screens to accommodate those who couldn't find a place inside. The abundance of video equipment hinted at a multimedia presentation, a digital tribute to Davy's life, complete with photos, and perhaps even video footage. Alongside the large TV and behind the pulpit, the altar area was completely filled and overflowing with flowers, many of them sent from around the nation by compassionate citizens. The flowers created a spectacular tapestry of color and fragrance. At the heart of this floral masterpiece rested a closed mahogany casket, its polished brass accents gleamed in the soft light. A single photograph of Dave, placed atop the casket, served as a reminder of the man they were gathered to honor. Violet scanned the crowd and spotted Dave's family in the front rows, and she also saw Mac, Dave's good friend that she met on that fateful night. Then she noticed Dave's wife Julie as she rose from her seat. With a delicate reverence, Julie placed a single white rose upon the polished mahogany casket, a gesture infused with a profound symbolism of love and loss. With her hand tenderly on the coffin, Julie said a few silent words of prayer, and then returned to her seat. Violet wondered, was she truly beginning to come to terms with Dave's passing, or was she simply going through the motions of a funeral? But she seemed to be steadier than the night she met her in the church's courtyard. There is an unspoken hope and desire, common to all funerals. It is a wish as old as time, a testament to the enduring power of the human connection. Those in attendance are longing for just one more word or touch with the friend or loved one that just departed this world. The hope is that the afterlife allows those that have departed opportunities to visit with those that have been left behind, to possibly watch over and safeguard loved ones. Maybe the departed could visit on holidays and birthdays. Perhaps love is an unbreakable bond, a force capable of defying even the ultimate separation of death. If there is ever a moment in time for a loved one to visit, their funeral would be a golden opportunity. Everyone they loved and cherished, and all their best friends would be there, in one place at the same time, in a room filled with love and longing. It would be their best last chance to connect. The funeral service began with a meaningful and comforting sermon. The pastor's words were wise and gentle, and they soothed the raw wounds of grief that had overtaken the congregation. With eloquence and compassion, he painted a picture of a world beyond our own, a realm where Dave's spirit now resided. The pastor assured them that while Dave was no longer a physical presence among them, his essence would continue to live on eternally in God's kingdom. It was a message of hope, a reminder that their beloved and friend was not truly lost, but merely journeying on a path that those in attendance could not follow at this time, a path that would ultimately lead to a joyous reunion. As Mac went up to the pulpit, his demeanor shifted from that of being a grieving friend to a proud and eloquent storyteller. Tasked with delivering Dave's eulogy, he embarked on a heartfelt journey through Dave's life. He would showcase a vibrant array of cherished memories, both traditional and extraordinary. With the aid of the large television screens and backed by the soundtracks of Dave's favorite music, Mac painted a vivid portrait of a fine and wonderful man, whose spirit was as energetic as the music that accompanied him through his life. From the tender innocence of infancy to the boundless energy of youth, Mac meticulously chronicled Dave's life. Their shared high school days from when Mac first met Dave formed a cornerstone of their enduring friendship. Dave's story took a romantic turn as Mac delved into the chapter of Dave's life when he met Julie, the love of his life, a love story that blossomed into their marriage, having children, and eventually grandchildren. There were so many great heartwarming photographs capturing birthdays, holidays, and countless shared adventures. All of them, painting a picture of a life well spent, and with family love. There were even a few photos of the grandchildren enjoying their chocolate ice cream in Dave's special toilet-shaped bowls. Mac expertly traced the evolution of Dave's life's work, the Savory Texan Diner, from its humble beginnings to its current status as a beloved community hub. The diner was more than just a restaurant to the community. It was a place where countless memories were made and bonds were forged. Losing Dave was akin to losing the diner, a cherished home away from home, and a touching loss felt by the entire community. Dave's story took a heart-wrenching turn as the screen displayed images of both Dave and Juan sharing numerous good times together. Their friendship was priceless and something to be celebrated, but their lives were also tragically intertwined as they both lost their lives that same night. As the almost 60-minute tribute drew to a close, the visual presentation displayed a family portrait showing Dave and Julie, surrounded by all their children and grandchildren. This photo of his family are the highlights of the most important accomplishments in Dave's life, his family. Mac paused, wiping tears from his eyes as he braced himself for his finale. It was another very heartfelt moment as Mac continued, saying, "If Dave could be here today, I know exactly what he would say. First, he would say thank you to all of you for being there for him all these years. He would also thank his mom and dad for having him and enabling him to have such a wonderful life, and I know what else he would say." Mac raised his fist into the air and then yelled out, "Be the Max." A chorus of voices from those in attendance, strong and united, responded with the same rallying cry. A testament to Dave's enduring legacy. His philosophy of living life to the fullest, a mantra encapsulated with the phrase, "Be the Max," had become an enduring inspiration among those who knew him well. Mac's eulogy was a masterpiece of Dave's life, unfolding before everyone's eyes, the story of Dave. It was as if they were all rediscovering Dave, layer by layer. Each memory was a chapter, with a fresh coat of paint on the portrait of a beloved man, and they all learned something new that they didn't know prior. The comforting pastor, with his kind presence, provided a closing prayer. His words would strengthen the wounded hearts gathered at the church. As the final amen echoed through the sanctuary, the pastor made the announcement of Dave's interment at Canyon Creek Memorial Cemetery, and it would take place the following day. With a delicate touch of diplomacy, he indicated that the ceremony would be a private affair for the family only, a subtle yet firm message to the media gathered outside. As the church gradually emptied, Violet observed that Dave's family stayed seated. Mac's presentation was both enjoyed and touching to everyone, and surely took an emotional toll on the family. Each event of the funeral brought forth a sense of finality, with no possibility of turning the clock backwards. A steady stream of friends approached the family, offering condolences and words of comfort. Davy, captivated by his sadness, paced aimlessly, his hand returning repeatedly to the casket as if seeking a touch from his departed father. Violet watched the unfolding scene with a mix of empathy and respect. She recognized the family's desire for privacy, their need to shield themselves from the prying eyes of the public and the relentless scrutiny of the news media. Yet, she felt a compelling urge to offer her own condolences and a silent prayer for Dave and his loved ones. Turning to Sam, she whispered, "Let's stay seated for a bit longer. I'd like to approach the altar and offer a private prayer with just Dave's family near." Sam nodded in understanding, and they settled back into their pews, patient observers of the unfolding drama. Eventually, Violet finally whispered, "Wait here, Sam, I'll be back in a few minutes, please keep an eye on my purse and coat." With a deep breath, she rose from her seat and made her way towards the casket. She was nervous and her heart was pounding in her chest. Davy saw Violet coming and he got a little nervous. He didn't know how this was going to play out. The emotional resilience of his mother had been stressed to the limit with Mac's eulogy. Violet's presence and what she represented, even with the best intentions, could prove overwhelming. Violet positioned herself facing the casket, with her eyes fixed on the polished mahogany surface. She offered a silent prayer, as she purposely averted her eyes from the family. However, the family members who had met her in the church's courtyard recognized her immediately, uncertain about whether to greet her or stay silent. Davy slowly walked over and stood next to Violet facing the casket. He whispered, "My mother has been doing much better since that night in the courtyard." Violet softly answered back, "I'm glad to hear that." Jennifer was nervously sitting next to her mother on the front row. Taking a cue from Davy, she nudged her mother, whispering, "Look, it's Violet." When Julie saw Violet unexpectedly standing there, she was shocked and surprised, placing her hand over her mouth. It was a moment that seemed frozen in time. It was the moment of truth. How was Julie going to react? The next move was left up to Julie. Violet was fully prepared to walk away if her presence upset Julie. A few seconds later, Julie reached out. "Violet," Julie called out. Violet turned and looked into Julie's eyes. Julie was trembling as she continued, "Please come here and sit next to me," as she patted the seat next to her in an inviting way. Violet walked over and slid into the seat next to Julie, then said, "Hi, Julie, I learned a lot about Dave this evening." Julie replied, "I was so worried that I would never see you again." Then she broke down into tears, crying openly. Violet remained silent, placing her hand on Julie's hand to comfort her. Slowly, Julie managed to compose herself, wiping away her tears. She said, "I'm ready for Dave's hug now." Hearing that, the family backed away, giving their mom some space for privacy. Julie's tears were contagious, bringing tears to her whole family, and Violet as well. Violet picked up and gently cradled Julie's hand, then softly spoke, "Julie, this hug is meant especially for you." Both of them leaned forward and embraced tightly. In an instant, Julie felt the powerful warmth of Dave's love in her heart. Julie had discreetly overheard her children talking, attempting to describe what they had experienced in the courtyard, but this feeling, this hug, was much more than she expected. She opened up and cried out loud, "Oh, Dave, I miss you so much." Julie continued to passionately cry, with streams of tears flowing down her cheeks. What nobody there could see was that Dave's spirit was also there, right next to them both. He had come to his funeral and gently placed his transcendent hands onto both Julie's and Violet's shoulder. Seemingly, Violet had become a kind of portal, perhaps due to Dave passing away during his last hug with Violet, amid his extreme emotional stress. Dave was passing the energy of his boundless love through Violet and into Julie. For Julie, this hug was genuine. She sensed without doubt, it was absolutely Dave's last hug. Something she was wanting more than anything in the world. To at least, hug her husband one more time. As Violet whispered into Julie's ear, the emotions of the moment were running high within all of Dave's children. They had all experienced the power of this last hug in the courtyard, and they knew it was real. A final desperate grasp, from a man they adored, and who returned his love unconditionally. With tears in their eyes and crying, one by one, they joined the embrace. As they held each other tightly, it became a group hug. With the strength of Dave's love, rushing through the entire family. Like a protector of this family, the pastor silently watched and stood guard. He knew firsthand the sadness that had swallowed Dave's family, and he recognized that they were healing each other. It would be the strength of their family that was going to get them through this tragedy, with a little help from Violet. Christians have a strong understanding and belief that when they leave this world, that their journey is not over. Dave, being a strong Christian, surely found his way to heaven. However, all the details and guidelines of the afterlife remain unclear. The presence of Dave's spirit at his church for his final farewell serves as a reminder that we don't know everything about death. To date, Jesus is the only known person to have returned from heaven, to openly participate with the living world, and that was a long time ago. Consider the possibility that divine intervention had brought about Violet's involvement with the Johnson's family tragedy. Although Violet had functioned well as an EMT for over a couple of years, emotionally she was broken, and unable on her own to get over the loss of her husband. John was her whole family, and when he was killed by a terrorist, in an instant, her entire family was wiped out. Since then, she remained broken and emotionally alone in the world. She was lost. When put together, Violet and the Johnson family were able to heal each other. Unknowingly, they needed each other to be the max.